You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Michelle Manley, and we talk about her making the decision to leave a 12-year marriage. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? Turns out there's a little bit more to this story, including the reality that Michelle was, for a time, a member of what I would call a high-control religion. Michelle calls it a cult. So we talk about that. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's go. Michelle Manley, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am. I'm very excited to be here.
Yay. I'm excited to have this conversation. I start almost every interview asking people, my guests, asking you, what part of the world do you call home these days?
I am in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and I've lived in Massachusetts most of my life.
That is spectacular. In a second, we're going to get to the topic of the day. But first, I want to ask you one more question just to get to know you a little bit better. Could you share with me and also with the audience something that you do to take care of yourself, something that you consider self-care? So it could be physical, it could be emotional, whatever that means for you.
Getting out in nature. Absolutely. I need to do that regularly. Whenever I feel frazzled or like I'm unraveling, I go and I will sit with the trees.
So nature in the terms of like a forest.
Or even honestly, yesterday I went to a daffodil field, like just nature, you know, just somewhere where I can go and there's, you know, greenery.
Very nice. All right. I love that answer.
That's
or the ocean. Yeah. Or the ocean. That's I'm in a place where the nature is mostly ocean. So absolutely. So now we're going to get to the topic of the day. Once upon a time, Michelle, somebody tried to run you over with a van. On Mother's Day, which is really, I mean, I gotta say, not a nice thing for somebody to do. Would you like to talk about that today and the decisions you made as a result of that?
Absolutely. Yes, I was in an abusive marriage. And my ex, he was attempting to get better and went and got some medication and was getting anger management classes, but got misdiagnosed and put on medication that kind of triggered a psychotic episode. And on Mother's Day 2012, I was with my mother and he just had a meltdown and he wanted me home. He wanted the kids home. So we, you know, I'm like, no, I'll come back when I'm done with my mother. And by the time I got back, he was in the van. And when he saw me, he just gunned it for me. What was amazing is that my dog pulled me out of the way. So for years, we called him Yuki the Wonder Dog.
That is really impressive. So that you shared with me that this was the story, but I didn't have any details to know what it was. That sounds scary. And it also, now that I have more details, sounds like it's a piece of the story that actually has lots more components going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, many, many things led me to being in an abusive marriage. I had spent time in a fundamentalist cult. And then I came out of that and went into a marriage. I was looking for answers. I had lost a lot of people in my life. And I think when the cult came along with answers, like, we know what happens when you die. We have the recipe, you know, that appealed to where I was at that moment in time. And being there, when you're getting the message of women being subservient and all that, that primed you for an abusive marriage. So it was just kind of a lateral step from one abuse to another.
Get that. All right. So I'm a person who believes in saying the thing instead of letting it go unsaid. So I want to ask a couple of questions about the event itself so that we don't let people make up their own stories about what happened. Like, we're just going to do this. So the person who tried to run you over in the van was somebody you were in a relationship with.
Yes.
I think you referred to him as your ex. So you guys were married at the time, but you're not now.
Yes, correct.
All right. I'm going to guess that the running over with the van was related to maybe that decision, but mm-hmm. It sounds like there was much more, because it sounds like this was not just an act of rage, that he was undergoing treatment for a mental health condition that wasn't working the way it was supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that tripped me up for a while during our divorce. Cause I was like, you know, do I try again? Because it was triggered by, you know, some medical confusion. And I had to eventually come to the conclusion that, the actions alone, and, he continued to be threatening and abusive, that wasn't going to change. So.
Was there a so let's before we dive deep, I want to get some more information, just basic data about the relationship. Like, how long were you guys together, and were there kids and things like that in the family? So tell me more about the family as it was at that time.
Yes, we were married for 12 years. We had three kids. They were about 8, 6, and 4 at the time. I might have even been a little younger. I had wanted to leave for a while, but he had a really good job. He was making a lot of money. He was like, "I will keep custody of the kids. You're never going to see them again." So I stayed out of, I ostensibly to protect the children. That was,
Well, when you have three kids with somebody, you're very entangled
yeah.
with them. And raising children, those are young kids, that is something that is hard. It is helpful to have other people around helping to say it. It's hard. It's a big step to leave. So I don't want to push it either way. I think it's very easy to ask people why they didn't make a decision to leave beforehand. But on the other hand, I also want to honor and give weight to the fact that that's a really hard thing to do, actually. And it opens up a lot of unknowns. All right. So you guys were together for 12 years. That's a full marriage. That's an
Yes.
absolute full marriage. Does sound like there were things that were going on that you were not totally thrilled with the marriage beforehand. Looking back now, how long ago did this happen that you separated?
It was 2012.
Oh, so it's been a very long time.
It's
Okay,
been a good
so,
long time.
all right, so this is a good time frame to ask this question. When you look back now with over a decade of distance on this, because probably at the time it was a lot of emotion and hard to see the forest for the trees. When you look back now, do you think that the relationship and the mental health issues were always there, or did it develop while during the relationship? Does that make sense?
I believe they were always there. I believe that the issues he had predates our knowing each other, and but he hid a lot of the abusive aspects until after we were married. And that was an eye opener.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, this is not to dress anything up or make anything seem nice or anything like that, but when we're courting people, we show our best selves, right? It's part of the, you don't walk up to somebody you want to have a relationship with and be like, "Hey, here are the worst parts about me."
Exactly.
So it's a tricky thing. We don't often see people's dark side until we're in the middle of a relationship. So, all right. So very good. So, the next thing you shared with me on the intake form was that you got diagnosed with CPTSD, after a time in the marriage and the cult. So CPTSD, for anybody who's listening who doesn't already know, the C in that stands for complex, right? When we talk, everybody's heard of post-traumatic stress disorder, but CPTSD stands for complex, as opposed to acute. And so I'm going to call that the two C bombs you dropped, CPTSD and the cult bomb. So I want to get a little more information about both of those things. And is it right to say that this happened after the run over with the truck, the van
Yes,
story? Okay.
the CPTSD diagnosis came about a year later.
A year later. Okay, so
Yeah.
right after the van happened, is that when you were like, "This cannot go on," and you began steps to separate from the
Yes.
relationship? Okay,
Yes.
and then let's talk. So then, trauma recovery is specific, right? So how did you? How are you going through this, and who are you talking to? Because I'm fascinated about this because, trauma aware, trauma, all of those things, those are buzzwords right now. But trauma recovery and specifically cult. Trauma recovery. Those are specialized things. So I'm just curious how you were working through it and where the diagnosis came from and stuff.
I had a private psychiatrist at the time, and then we also had a family therapist. So we were getting a lot of intensive help. I knew the kids needed help. I knew I needed help. So we had me mental health professionals right in there. But the cult stuff I didn't really unravel until probably about 8 years ago.
Okay.
And I carried that, and I hadn't even realized it was spiritual abuse. Like, to me, it was just like, oh, it's just a really strict church, and that's how it was. And it wasn't until I found people in the deconstruction community, and I started talking to people that have deconstructed their relationships with religions, that really it illuminated, like, oh, that was abusive. Like, this was not
Okay.
good. It really had flown under my own radar for quite a while.
That is really interesting. Okay, so really, this was you were dealing head on with the stress of detangling your relationship, and you got a lot of help, which is speaks highly of you as a person and wanting to take care of yourself and so on and so forth. And those folks are like, hey, this is what we would consider trauma, living in an abusive relationship for a long time. We call that and to help that. But you didn't even talk to them about the fact that you had grown up in a fundamentalist religion. So that was all related to being in a 12-year marriage with someone who was consistently behaving erratically and abusively. So, wow. All right. So the decision you made was to leave the marriage after the violence got to a point where you could no longer stay. And so, and then you were in that recovery and you separated. And then many years go by and you piece together that you also had stories you were carrying forward from your. So when were you, tell us more about the cult. Like, is this something you were raised in? We should probably, instead of calling it a cult, we should probably refer to it as a fundamentalist religion. Just, but like, tell us more about it, and we'll talk about that.
Yes, I was in my mid-20s when I joined. And
Okay.
again, it was, people that really had the answers. They were like, life is, you just, do these things and God will protect you and everything will be fine. And you'll see your family again. And that appealed so much. And, in their defense, I guess I would say, they did have some things right in terms of, really, they were very active in the community. They gave back, but then on the other side, they were definitely very controlling. You weren't allowed to date outside of the group. You weren't certainly couldn't marry outside the group.
Okay.
There was it was very insulated.
Is this where you met your husband?
It sort of. He had left and was thinking about coming back, and we got introduced at a church service.
Okay.
But he wasn't a member of the church at that point, and that caused, fervor when we got together.
Okay. So you joined this as an adult. You found this community, a religious community, but it's not something that your family of origin was in. And you mentioned something, you said that they told you that you would see your family again. Are you distant from your family, or is your family deceased, or what was the tr appeal
I
there?
meant the ones that were deceased,
The
those
ones
like
that were
you'll see your
deceased.
father, you'll see your grandparents, and to me, that was all I wanted out of life,
And what was that? Why was that such a strong draw?
That's a good question. I think both my father and my grandfather's deaths were rather traumatic, and I think that wounding was there. I never really dealt with my father's death. What he died when I was 14, and I kind of just threw myself into school and work and, was doing other things and pretty much anything to not feel. So I think, when somebody came to me with a, a prescription, basically a multi-step plan to get what my heart desired so deeply, it was an easy sell at that point.
Yeah, you packaged that up very nicely, but I bet you that was pretty painful to acknowledge because you, from someone who's listening to the story from the first time, you're taking accountability and responsibility for the decision to enter the cult based on what you were looking for. I think that's a very grown-up answer. And it sounds like you've really done a lot of work on it for somebody who's listening on the outside. But yeah, if you were to go back at the time, it probably. It's hard to understand why people join groups that are high control groups for people who maybe have never done it. But I think that if I can say it, it was very appealing to you. They offered
Absolutely.
you something that was very appealing. So you
Yes.
join the faith group, the high control faith group, which at the time probably feels very natural. Through that extended connection, you meet this person who you fall in love with and you marry, and you make three people. So you've got like a growing family. At that point, when like say like right after you like when you're in the middle of it, how did life feel? Like, so you've got three kids You feel you're checking off the boxes, doing the things that people tell you to do. You've got a community, you've got a family. How did life feel at that point? Did it feel like things were going well? Were there happy times?
During the marriage,
Yep, during the marriage.
it wasn't all hell and gloom. I'll say that there were absolutely good times. It wasn't abusive all the time, but a very erratic behavior, and certainly very comfortable destroying things when he was angry. And once you've been hit and you see somebody destroying things, you know that you're in line. So
Yeah.
there was a lot of fear. I had a lot of health issues at the time. I had fibromyalgia very badly. I had some other health issues. I was battling weight issues. It was physically, my body was bearing what I was going through, without a doubt. I look back on those times, and other than my family, I think of those times as very lonely. I think I was
Okay.
very alone. And when I look back, it's a sense of yearning for connection that I think I would have probably left earlier had I had good connections in the community and in my life in general, other than just my parents, who were wonderful. But,
It's one of the things that's really challenging about creating a family in modern times is that you are surrounded by the people in your family, right? You've got your partner and you've got your kids, but an enormous number of people who are raising small children do talk about how isolating the experience is. So you're like never alone, but you may not actually have the support of a community outside your house. And I find it very confusing. It's one of the things that I share with people very much about the transition between being someone who, at the time, I was a step parent. And then when I switched to being the primary caregiver, of, when I added kids to the family, I became a parent. Just shocking how like alone you can be. There's no one around at 3 in the morning when you're walking the baby in your living room. It's just you. So yeah, no, I think that's very good. Okay, so not everything was horrible. That's, I mean, that's it, you can be in some really, really tough situations and you can find the silver lining. But but things were unstable. You were aware of the volatility emotionally and physically that you were living through, but it hadn't hit a point where you were ready to cut and run until you really felt like your life was acutely in danger. If you had not had that van incident, this is kind of a terrible question, but I'm asking it anyway. If you had not had the van incident, do you think that you would have eventually found your way to making these changes? Or is the without the van incident, do you think you would still be there in this family muddling through?
It's interesting. A few days before the van incident, I actually asked for a separation, which
Okay.
I may have also been a factor in what transpired. So I was fixing to,
You were on your way out. You were on your way out. All right, so very good. So then, what are the things that have changed in your life? And it's been 10 years. What are the things, and divorces are not overnight, so separation is not overnight, but what are the things that have changed in your life as a result of making the decision to end this and walk away from the violence?
I'm a whole different person now in so many ways. I've done so much healing work, and I've reclaimed so many bits of myself that I hadn't given voice to for years, decades. I'm a better parent, I think, at this point. And I became a Reiki master, so I learned how to do energetic healing, which has been probably one of the pivotal helpers on my road to healing. And I actually now help other people in their healing journeys, and so I get to watch my story actually be have benefits, have inherent goodness in it. As dramatic and as remarkable as it is, like, I can see now how each piece, brought forth a different piece of me, which I can now use to help other people.
All right, so very good. So how long, so this started, you separated and there was a season of working on yourself. And how long would you say that how long would you say that you had to work on yourself before you felt like, oh, you know what, I am ready to share my story and begin to help other people?
It was probably about 7 or 8 years. of
And so
really, and I was also raising three kids who were equally traumatized. So my time wasn't always able to be spent on my healing journey. I also have one child, well, actually three children are on the spectrum, but one is more
okay.
needful than the others. So it was a while.
Yeah, no, as I mean, as it should be. Like, I mean, as long as it takes, right? As long as it takes.
Absolutely.
So working on yourself, you then make the shift to say, you know, I'm ready to talk about what I went through. I'm ready to help other people. You're a Reiki master. And do you work with people who do you like to work with?
When I'm doing Reiki, I'll share with, pretty much everybody because I think Reiki is so universal and wonderful. But when I'm like really working heart to heart with somebody, I really tend to gravitate towards women over 40 who are sort of waking up and realizing they've been on autopilot for a while and that their life and they're not embodying their lives and they're realizing that there's more to life, but it's not religion. So what is it? How do I find myself again? And
All right.
those are my people.
Those are your people. Those are your people. So what are the, so you did this in two different changes. Like, so one is that you left the fundamentalist religion. Was that at the start of your marriage, or were you both in
Yes.
it? Okay. So you left the fundamentalist religion at the start of your marriage because the person you fell in love with was not in the flock. Okay. So that is one change. And then you committed to this 12-year marriage. You're in the marriage. What are and do you think you would have stayed in the flock, in the faith, if you had not met him?
I don't think so. The entire time I was in the church, they kept telling me how rebellious I was. I never fit in there because I questioned everything. And it was beginning to feel incredibly restrictive and just not. I saw a lot of hypocrisy. I heard a lot of great theories, and then in practice, that was not what I saw applied. So I was one foot out the door there as well.
Okay, so very good. So when we talked about this a second ago, I noticed that you gave a very accepted ownership. Like, you were very much taking ownership of your part in both of these things, which it, from my standpoint, represents healing, right? When we first leave something that's really, really painful, it's like everything is projected at the terrible person, the terrible situation, all of those things. And then through the healing process, we get to acceptance. Would you also say, not everybody gets here, and I don't think everybody has to get here, but is there a piece of you that can look at what you got out of the marriage, out of the relationship, out of the faith group, and actually point to things that you see as beneficial from the experience, or not at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like in terms of my time with the church, I am so much more discerning. I watch actions, not words. I mean, there's so much in my growth that can be tied back to that. And the marriage, well, I reclaimed myself. And I think I almost had to lose myself in some ways. It was kind of, I can't imagine my healing journey without that part.
Okay.
It almost feels like it was just part of my journey.
Yeah, that's okay. And I think that's, I mean, it's kind of a crazy thing. I don't think every journey has that or has to have it by a long shot. But I thought when I heard you say that, I thought, oh, I wonder if she's got a piece of this that is there. Because not everything happens for a beneficial reason. And I'm sure you would have loved to have had a life story that did not include the hardship, but sometimes we can look back and say, oh, you know what? I did actually, this was hard. There are parts of this that really stunk, but I did actually learn these pieces of it that I might not have otherwise. So I appreciate you sharing that. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to tell, you told us what you were doing in helping people as a Reiki person, energy healer. Reiki, is that right? Reiki energy healer.
Yes.
There you go. Reiki person. Sorry about that. So, I want to give you a chance to directly tell people how they can connect with you and find you online.
Yes, I'm on Facebook under Michelle Manley, and it's my face, so easy to find. And online, it's michellemmanley.com/home, HOME, will bring you to my website.
Very
And you can find a
nice.
bit more about what I do and how I navigate the world.
Fantastic. So the easiest way for anybody who's listening, who's out there in the world, like on a walk, on a treadmill, doing things like that, the easiest way to get those links is to be subscribed to my community, the Imperfect Adulting email community, and then I email them directly to you. You can click on them. They'll also be found in the show notes and on YouTube. All right, we're going to do the three rapid fire questions just for fun, not about any of the things that we talked about before. The idea is that you just answer with whatever comes to mind. All right. Have you ever, or would you, jump out of an airplane?
Oh, I've considered it. I think at this point, I'm 57. I think my window for that has passed for me comfortably. But when I was younger, I really considered it. So I think if the right opportunity had presented itself, I probably would have done it.
Okay, all right, very good. All right. Do you read or listen to books? And if so, what is a recent book that you have read that you want to share with us?
Oh, yes, I love reading. I love audiobooks. I'm rereading The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron right
Yep.
now, and I'm also Awakening Somatic Intelligence. It's a wonderful book on how to come into greater communion with your body.
Very nice. So are you doing your artist pages in the morning?
Yes.
Your writing pages? Yes. What is the morning
Morning
pages.
pages. Yep.
Morning pages. All right, very good. So, what is your favorite store for shopping? A place where if you got a gift card for $1,000, you'd be thrilled.
Oh, that's a tough one. Where do I go? Probably Lush.
Oh, with the bath bombs.
Yeah. Yep.
Very nice. When I walk by that store, it is like such a perfume explosion. It's such a perfume explosion. That is a great answer. All right. That's it, Michelle Manning. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.